Joining us once more for his regular chat, it is Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's a bit windy here, but not too cold.
Back over in,
down in London.
In London, of course, and a bit of a celebration happening over the weekend.
Yeah, we're having a bash at Chelsea Harbour Hotel, about 310, 320 people from all walks of life. And so we good fun. Certainly a lot of hard work's been put in planning it by Jane Barr, who used to be my PA at both Leeds and Chelsea.
Mm.
And a lot of old friends and former foes from the past.
It should be interesting. Plenty to go through as ever, KB. Let's start, as we usually do, with Leeds United. And some positive news on the pitch with a win over high-flying Hull City.
Well, it was a good win because, let's face it, Hull are a good team. They're playing well and they're fighting for promotion under Steve Bruce, who's a very able manager. And I remember him, he went from Norwich to, I think, Norwich to Man United centre-half. I think he went for £170,000. Now, I was at Chelsea at the time, just too late to sign him. He didn't want to have a great career as a player. Anyway, so there you are. So they were worthy opponents. And always marked down what I thought. And I thought to myself, well, if Leeds get a draw, it'd be a good result after two losses on the trot. But in the event, they played very well, I understand, particularly the first half. And they got the two goals. A bit more sticky in the second half, but 2-1, 3 points, ease the pressure a little bit as you're going into the busy Christmas period. So, good morale booster. And, of course, the fans, as usual, good attendance.
Yes, certainly was. More happening at Leeds United at the moment. And some disappointment, really. Sam Byram has turned down his latest contract offer. So, it looks like he will be leaving the club, most probably in January, depending on what offers come in for him.
Well, within reason, I think that it's clear that Sam is determined to leave the club. And therefore, he may as well go as soon as possible. Because if he stays until the end of the season, receives his contract and walks out, he will get Leeds will get compensation because Sam's under 25. But the compensation award is peanuts compared with genuine arm's-length transfer fee. And the problem is that it may well be that a bit like Jermaine Beckford, his agent deliberately just refused all blandishments because Beckford walked out, of course, he was over 25, so he got nothing. But that reflected in the wages he was able to demand from Everton. But subsequently, of course, Jermaine didn't do well at Everton. And eventually paid him, I'm told, they paid him £500,000 to go to Leicester. And he didn't have a great career at Leicester either. So you always have to weigh up career and money. But on the other hand, it was a bit silly to offer Sam a two-year extension for the same money, having originally tried to get him to take less money, which was absolutely stupid. No player's going to do that. But then, having made his mind up, he's going to go. And if he felt it fair to the manager, he has to start planning for the future. And he's got to start planning now for promotion next year, or top six. And he does that by blooding other youngsters and giving them experience so that next season they're off to hit the ground running. There's no point in giving games to Sam for two reasons. First of all, just clogging up the system. And there's always a danger that a player who knows he's going will be careful of tackles and that sort of thing in case he gets an injury, which spoils his career. So in all, I'll be very sorry to see Sam go. as I'm sure a lot of other people will be. But this could have been and should have been resolved a year, 18 months ago. With the trouble of Massimo, of course, he needs everything to the last minute and created problems for himself. Nothing we can do about it. So, I don't know, I'm sorry, Sam, we'll be leaving Leeds United. But I think it's inevitable. And I think the circuit better if he goes in January than June. Apart from the odds, the money Massimo gets in, he can then start paying certainly some of his outstanding legal cases, particularly those claiming for compensation with loss of office. So thanks, Sam. You've been a great player, great servant of the club, and I'm sure you're not staying, but clearly you're not. So, as it said, if it be done, best done soonest.
Yes, I think that's wise words. Moving on, I wondered if we can get an update on the situation with David Haig.
Yes, well, I can speak about it now because what's happened. David Haig was due to be released on the 16th of November. He rather unwisely turned down the offer of a pardon from the Sheikh, his argument being that since he wasn't guilty of anything, he didn't need to be pardoned. Well, that might be well-meaning, but I think it's a bit fatuous attitude because I don't trust the Arabs. He should know, having spent two years there, he shouldn't trust the Arabs either. He should have taken the plane, taken the pardon, got on the plane, got out. His appeal, I don't think it was heard or blah, 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 whatever it was. If I'm being vague, I'm afraid that's because the situation is vague. Anyway, it's due to be released on Monday the 16th. On the 13th, Friday, even though it's a holy day in Dubai, you know, it's like their Sunday. They walked into him and he was accused of defaming GFH's good name on Twitter. Well, I didn't know GFH had a good name, but that's a debatable point. And he was moved from the real jail back to a police station and the cells there. Now, he hadn't physically been charged with it yet, though of course he wasn't charged with the original allegations either. But apparently there's some meeting going on this week or next week or sometime ever to the matter to try to be resolved. We were hoping, of course, David would be one of the guests of honour at our bash on Sunday, but unfortunately, no, he won't be. It's very uncertain. The trouble is that the Arabs have very long holidays, so nothing's in. They don't have deadline. Nothing is of any time consequence to them, and they're pretty workshy anywhere at the best of times. Anybody who goes to the Gulf will see all the work's done by Asians, Pakistanis, Indians, Bangladeshis, Filipinos. And Sri Lankans, and there you are. But they don't care. And since you're an infidel, you're of no consequence. So all fear of that, David. Fear the worst and hope for the best. But he's a stubborn man in some respects, and he's paying the price for it. As I said before, Suzanne and I took him out for dinner on the 10th of May last year, Saturday night, and told him not to go to Dubai. It was a trick, it was a trap, not to trust him. He discounted our advice, went, landed on the Sunday morning, the 17th. He went on the following Saturday, the 17th, landed on the morning, the 18th, went to his apartment, showered and changed, put his suit on, went to the office, 10 o'clock, rested at 10 past and been stuck in jail ever since. In fact, he'd probably have died because of his dietary problems if he hadn't been for Prisoners Abroad, which is a charity which helps people like David. But now, who knows? Apparently, defamation can carry a 3-year sentence.
Well, moving on, KB, and there's a lot of other news breaking over this week, and quite a lot of it surrounding, well, a couple of people. First of all, Tyson Fury, the new heavyweight champion of the world, over some comments he's made about homosexuality, about women, and why he's in a certain National Broadcasters Sports Personality of the Year award. Of course, we don't recognise that one at all. But I just want to get your thoughts on the furore that's been caused by this new heavyweight champion.
Well, the trouble is today, isn't it, that all the so-called people who are so liberal and tolerant of all views, as long as it coincides with their own. And we've seen this with the vote to bomb Syria. The Labour Party, or some Tories as well, who voted in favour of it. A terrible personal abuse, including death threats. And that seems to be the norm today. Somebody says something that somebody doesn't like. Oh, they can say what they like, but you can't. No, I'm not agreeing what Tyson Fury said. I'm not even sure I know what he said. But it's a free country. He's entitled to his opinions, however wacky they are, as some of these other ones. The easiest, obvious thing to do is to let him, instead of making all the fuss, don't ban him, which will then make him a cult hero in some areas. Let him, stick him in, he's in there. Leave him awards, then don't vote for him. That'll be far better message than making him a martyr. Because otherwise it's just mob rule, isn't it? So anyway, that's my view on Fury.
Well, let's move on to the other man that's making all the headlines this week, and it's the Republican Party potential nominee, which is the multi-billionaire Donald Trump, and certainly some interesting things that he's been coming out and saying that he wants to ban Muslims from entering the United States. And it's thrown the Republican Party into a bit of chaos over in the United States.
Well, the Republican Party was in chaos before, otherwise Obama wouldn't have been elected president 8 years ago. But the thing about Trump, he says, because he doesn't care, he says what an awful lot of people think. Well, I think it's a wider, a more serious subject than Trump's outbursts. What we have to look at is this. This is something that everybody in Britain should be debating as well. And particularly British Muslims. And if they're listening, I hope they listen carefully. I do not believe these are genuine worshippers of Allah or Mohammed. I believe they're just the biggest mafia-style bunch of thugs the world has ever known. But they happen to be Muslims. And what is needed now is for the Muslims to stand up and be counted. It's okay for the Christians to be condemning the Muslims, but it is the genuine, straightforward, honest, Allah-worshipping Muslims that should be standing up and criticising and emphasise their detestation of ISIS and all it stands for. I suspect that many Muslims do not understand their faith as well as they should. How many of them read the Quran in detail? And the problem is, of course, Islam's are sort of self-appointed. And so the average Muslim in a mosque hears what his preacher tells him. A bit like he was in the old days of the Catholic Church, where nobody could read or write, and the Bible was printed in Latin. But one of the other problems we have is that Muslims do not integrate. They live within their own community. And quite a few of them don't even speak English. Which again is unfortunate, because Britain has always absorbed immigrants, made them one of their own in time, over the centuries, over the generations. And we've lived together in peace and relative harmony. Well, you've always had the occasional black riots and the occasional anti-Semitic behaviour. But that's part and parcel of life, but not to the extent that we have with ISIL, whatever the hell damn they're called. And it's time, I think, and very important, that the average, overwhelming majority of moderate Muslims stand up with their Christian neighbours, fellow citizens, and condemn Islam and Israel, follow them, and give the information to the authorities if they know of anything that's brewing or happening. It's their duty to their country and their sovereign. But I think this is a war, and we, the West, are fighting it with one hand behind our back. You take the people who have murdered in this country. When they're eventually arrested, caught, what happened? Oh, they're arrested. Then some bloody money-grabbing human rights lawyer stands up to defend them, often on legal aid. Then they're found guilty. They're sentenced to 8, 10, 15, 20 years in jail. If they behave themselves, they come out half that time. So it's policemen fighting soldiers. And I'm afraid they change that, should bring an emergency law in, and anybody guilty of terrorist acts should be shot once they've been proved guilty. That's the end of it. The Bible says it, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That's the only way these people will understand.
Well, finishing up on
that happy note.
A more happier note, yes. Let's finish up on a more positive note, and another chance to win entry to the Radio Yorkshire Executive Box at Elland Road.
Yep, great experience. I gather the reports we get from the people who win every week, more and more. And I'm told that the Leeds United catering staff are doing a great job.
Yeah, it's a stunning afternoon.
There's a chance for 12 people to come and experience it. Oh, and by the way, we do take pie tax vouchers.
Now,
off you go, Darren. Tell the world what they want to hear.
Preston North End game is the one we're promoting today, and if you'd like to be there,
Simon Grayson, Beckford.
Exactly, it's going to be very interesting.
Who's that little midfielder we let go to Bristol City? Kilkenny.
Neil Kilkenny.
Yeah, I think they've got somebody else there as well, haven't they?
It'll certainly be a great atmosphere to see Simon Grayson and Jermaine Beckford back. And if you'd like to be there in a bit of executive luxury in the Radio Yorkshire box, you just need to answer this question. At which club did Jermaine Beckford begin his professional playing career? Was it A, Wealdstone FC? Was it B, Leeds United? Or was it C, Uxbridge FC? Text DAB and your answer A, B or C to 84383. So you only text the words DAB A, DAB B or DAB C. or your entry may be invalid. Your text costs £1 plus your standard message rate. Entry to the competition closes on the 13th of December and the winners will be chosen shortly after. All the T's and C's you can find at radioyorkshire.co.uk. Click on the Win tab. Good luck to everybody there. KB, once again, an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much indeed. And good luck, everybody. Yeah, somebody's got to win it. Could be you.